You can make great wine, but if you can't sell it, you're nowhere.
You know, I'm the guy that loves the cat piss descriptor.
To be a winemaker, you need to be a little bit crazy.
If we really do want to spend 20 hours a day here through harvest, why not have as much fun playing and doing as much different things as we can?
It's definitely different every single year.
We make a white Barbera, which is called Carica l'Asino, which, by the way, means load the donkey, and we don't know why.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 290. This week we feature Laura Diaz Munoz of Eller's Estate in Napa Valley. Is there a difference making wine in Spain as opposed to the United States? The end result is still the same, right? Laura Diaz Munoz is originally from Spain and now makes wine in Napa Valley at Eller's Estate. The grapes are different, but the end result is still a quality bottle of wine. Here, Laura talks about the differences, as well as her new gig as winemaker at Eller's. Wine is a journey, and Laura is just getting started. We're here at Eller's Estate, and we haven't been here in a few years. We had interviewed the previous winemaker many years ago, but we are here today with Laura Diaz Munoz.
Hi.
Did I get it right?
Yes.
She's laughing because I got it right.
Yeah.
Probably not too many people get it right.
It's not easy to pronounce, yeah.
That's okay. I'm proud of myself. I feel pretty good about it. So how are you today?
I'm good. Anxious. Nervous.
Yeah. That's okay.
Just waiting for the grapes to be ready to be picked.
Oh, see, I thought it was all about me.
No, sorry.
Yeah, I guess you would be. Have you picked anything yet?
We picked the Sauvignon Blanc almost a month ago.
A month ago, really? Wow.
Mm-hmm, August 28th.
Yeah, sure.
So, almost. And the Merlot last week, starting fermentation. Mm. But right now, we're just waiting.
Waiting. It's a waiting game.
Uh-huh. It is.
Well, I guess the first question about harvest is, what are you thinking about this vintage, this 2018 vintage?
I think it's going to be great. This weather is perfect. The longer that the grapes hang in the vines, the better. And I think it's really good for especially this location. I've been here only for 2 months, so I don't really know or understand yet the microclimate and the blocks and the fruit, how it ripes. But what I notice is that it's very warm. So this weather actually is helping to delay the picking, and it's getting fruit that has better flavors. And like right now, the fruit tastes very good. We're just like getting closer to perfection. So it's good. It's looking very good.
Good. Yeah, there's no rain in the forecast, so that's
good
news.
No rain,
yeah.
No. A little bit of heat, I believe, in the next two days. But it looks perfect.
Good. I'm glad to hear
that.
Well,
good.
I wish you luck. I hope you have a great vintage. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about you. Where did you work before you came to Eller's?
So here in Napa Valley, I work for Cardinal, Locoya, La Jota, Manbrave, and I make a wine for Jackson Family Wines that it was Gallery, that brand. And I spend all my time that I've been in U.S. in Napa Valley here or working with those brands for Jackson Family Wines for almost 11, 12 years.
Wow.
Yeah, I came in 2007.
Where are you from originally?
Spain.
So when you were in Spain, was winemaking what you were doing? Was it something you were leading toward?
Yeah, like I think when I was 18 years old and I had to decide where to study in university, I always liked wine. I'm from Madrid originally, so it's not a wine region per se. My family is not in the wine business. I just like food and wine since a very early stage age, and I try to put myself in situations that took me to drink wine and understand more about wine. But in Madrid, there was no, back then, there was no like a program for enology. So I studied biology and food and wine technology. And the last year of my career, I have to do an internship in a food and beverage company. And there were a few wineries offering internships. And I raised my hand. It's like, I want to be in a winery. There's wine involved. I want to be there. And from there, I kept studying about enology and viticulture, and I work in different wineries in Spain before coming this way.
Mm. So when you came here, have you done any continuing education, or has your education been pretty much on the job?
Well, in Spain, I study a master in enology and viticulture, which was back then, it was one of the most recommended back then. So I had that background in Spain, and I worked for 3 or 4 years prior coming here. But, you know, like everything, until you don't start making wine or doing a job, you don't really know how to do it. So
the reality,
exactly. And here I have a lot of opportunities to learn and to try new things and techniques, and I've been more in contact with other winemakers, especially working for a big winery or big company like Jackson Family Wines. You know, I was in touch with different wine regions or wine appellations and vineyards and winemakers. So I guess I learned the most working here in Napa Valley.
There has to be, for you, such a huge difference between the wine made in Spain. I mean, logically, anybody who drinks wine knows there's a big difference. But in terms of methodology and how the wine's made there, was it a huge difference for you, or are there very similar types of work?
Ooh, to me, it's more about the vision that people has and what they understand about quality or what they are looking for when they are making wine, the styles. It's quite different, the style of winemaking here in US than is in Spain. In Spain, it's more about tradition, about making wines. Well, where I work, it was more about making wines that were more commercial. Mm. But they were they were using the same techniques that they're using here, just with different goals, I would say. And here, there's a little bit more freedom, and there's more about the winemaker can express themselves, the personality, what the style that they want. It's not just about a wine region.
Sure.
Spain is changing a lot, and I'm following a lot of, you know, the people that I study with and new generations that are doing really fun things, and probably because they have traveled around the world and they've seen that, you know, it's better to express yourself, to tell a story about the wine that you are making. It's not just about denominación de origen in Spain. So I think that's for me the big difference.
Well, the thing too is there's some wonderful wines made in Spain. I mean, I'm a big fan of Spanish wines, and what's nice about them is they're a little bit of a better value and a little bit of a competition between the wines in Napa Valley, which have gotten a bit more expensive by comparison.
Yes, and they're raising the price of those wines in Spain. They are, you know, they're still really good and affordable, but I think they are realizing that, you know, they need to put more value on those and the quality that is coming from those wines.
Sure, and they've got much more aggressive in their marketing too. Mm-hmm. They're much more visible in this country,
which is, I think, is great. And yeah. I'm excited to see that.
Yeah. No, I bet you are, because there's about education. It's about mm-hmm. understanding the differences between the grapes, because the grapes are so much different over there.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it has to do a lot with, you know, winemakers getting out of Spain and seeing what is done in other countries like US, and how important it is to sell the wine, sell yourself, and, you know, sell the story of amazing wines that are made there. So. Yeah,
yeah. And now here at Ehlers, how long have you been winemaker here?
Just 2 months.
Okay, just so it's, you know, you're diving into the deep end with it being harvest.
Yes. I knew about Ehlers, of course, before. Sure. In the valley, I visited the tasting room. It's amazing. It's a really cool spot. And I know locals love the place and tourists. I love the wines before. I knew the winemaker that was here before. And I was actually not very pleased that I had the opportunity to be part of this, and I'm very excited. It's very new because I always work with mountain fruit and high elevation fruit. So right now I'm just working with a state that I can control every single aspect of everything. It's kind of new and it's very exciting.
I like how your eyes light up and you say control.
Yes.
Well, that's what it is.
A little bit control freak, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think you have to be a control freak if you're a winemaker.
Yeah, and that's what actually attracted me the most about this place, is just because I can be part of everything, and I can control and take decisions about every single step of making the wine, in the vineyards, selling the wine, and I think it's a great opportunity, and it's great for a winemaker to understand other parts of the business.
Sure. Well, as a winemaker, though, I'm a little curious about your concern for the future of Napa Valley. They've done so incredibly well here, but again, let's face it, the prices are getting a little high. And this is something I deal with, what a lot of our listeners will say, well, gee, you know, their wine is very expensive. And I always try to explain there's a very strong process that goes into making wine. That's where the cost comes from. But, you know, how do you do that when you're talking to people and they're tasting their wine and they're saying, gee, this is awfully expensive?
Well, it's very expensive to farm grapes here. That's why I think that's what drives the pricing. Also, Napa Valley is special. The quality coming from here, like, it's, I don't think that you can taste a bad wine from Napa Valley,
to be honest.
Like, there's a consistent quality year after year, even with the difference in the vintages. So it's an outstanding region. It's a very privileged place. So it's kind of like, for a bottle of wine, you pay for that something that is special in Napa. And, you know, it's true that it's maybe becoming a little bit too crazy. And I think in the short future, they will balance it out, like especially because there are other wine regions that are putting efforts to equal or like make better wines. Yeah. And, you know, they are putting all their efforts about marketing and PR of like being up there, and consumers are knowing more about wine. They know more about wine and they want to know more. So they taste other things and not just Cabernet Sauvignon, other varietals. So I think it will be like a gradual transition onto something that maybe Napa Valley has to scale down a little bit in the sort of future. We'll see. Like, it's very hard to predict. I think there's still a lot of followers and people that love Napa, and they will pay those prices.
Oh, yeah, plenty of people do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's true also that the style of the wines, there are like new winemakers also that have new visions, like, for example, myself, I like to play a lot of with the winemaking techniques and, you know, make wines that are kind of like not just Napa, but more interesting. So I think there will be a natural transition that it will happen in the next 5-10 years of making wines more interesting, maybe new varietals. Sure. Because of the change in the climate. It's getting very warm in Napa. So we'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see. It's exciting, but.
What wines are you making here at Ehlers?
Cabernet Sauvignon, we make a Merlot and a Cabernet Franc, we make a Petit Verdot. Right now, I think last year, 2 years ago, was the first time that they made a blend that is called Portrait, Sauvignon Blanc, and a Rosé.
Nice. So pretty much what you'd expect to find in Napa Valley.
Yes, Bordeaux varietals, yeah.
Do you make your own wine?
No.
You don't?
No.
Oh, okay.
I made Gallery, and a lot of people think that Gallery was my own brand. Mm-hmm. And that I started. And it's true that I started it from scratch. And it's a new brand that I developed myself, but with the help of Jackson Family Wines. Mm-hmm. So I don't own that brand, and I don't own those wines. I made them for them. But I was kind of like the face. It was all about Gallery, and I made what I thought that I had to do to make those wines, and got a lot of support from the company. But moving to Ehlers, I'm not making it anymore.
Okay, that's good. Nothing wrong with that. So, you know, for your period of time you've been in the wine business, this is probably a bit of a loaded question, but what makes you crazy about this business? What's the one thing that just you're just like, geez, can't they figure this out? Or, you know, why does this go this way?
I think it's because I like the challenges. I get bored very easily, extremely easily. Like that's why I need to try always new techniques, or I like to try new wine regions. And I don't know in the future, Nellers, if I will bring fruit from somewhere else and make something fun. I just like that every year is different. Then there's a science behind it, but it doesn't matter what. Like God decided that that the quality is going to go one way or the other, or the flavors. Like every single year is different. The way that the berries, whatever you effort you put in the farming, is actually get very reflected in the quality and the grapes. So it's like it's a lot of hands on, a lot of thinking, a lot of, you know, it's like forecasting how it's going to be the weather, what I have to do in advance to, you know, mitigate what is happening in the vineyards, and then, you know, decide what is best while you are tasting the tanks or the barrels. And it's very dynamic, and I like that, and I like to take decisions and change my mind constantly. And I think it's fun to make wine.
Do you find it I guess I don't know if strange is a good word, but you're walking into someone else's shoes, especially with only 2 months, basically what was set before by Kevin is what you're working with to finish this vintage, and then maybe you look to do something different this year, something that's more your own style?
Well, I think every winemaker put a little bit of their signature in the wines that they make. It's kind of inevitable. Like, I cannot do anything for it. Like, I will put myself on the wines that I make. I always do. So I'm going to be very respectful with the terroir. I'm going to be respectful with the land it's giving me. I'm just going to make wines as I think that I need to. I will take decisions as they go, and I will be based in my intuition and what I understand that is better for the wines. But it's pretty straightforward, this place. It's small, and the vines are kind of like 20, 30 years old. So they're very well balanced. Quality has been consistent, and yields have been consistent for many years. I think it's going to be very easy.
How many acres are you farming here right now?
Like around 40 acres.
And predominantly, again, as we said, red. You know, so many winemakers have moved to go into the sparkling world. Do you think that's something you guys would ever do? I mean, obviously you're only doing the one white, but is that something you'd like to investigate?
I think why not? Yeah. That's always in the back of my mind to make some sparkling. I think it's fun, and maybe.
Well, there's a lot of great
Spanish. I don't say
sparkles.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do. You come from a place that I think it's not as well known as it should be for the sparkling wine they make in Spain.
Yeah. And what people don't know is that there are other wine regions around Spain that they make sparkling wines. They're just not popular, or they just don't leave the wine regions because everything gets sold in Spain. But yeah.
Is there room to grow in terms of more vineyards for the property, or that would just simply be an acquisition type thing if you decide to go into a Chardonnay or whatever?
Mm-hmm. I actually talked about it, and we thought it's like if there's a possibility of buying another property or buying grapes, we are open to change. We're open to see what's new and exciting, to see what are the trends also in the market, what I would like to make and can be fun to make. So it's an exciting moment because we can actually do something different in the short future. But yeah. Right now, to me, my goal is to understand this estate this year and then see next vintage.
Yeah, I'm putting the cart before the horse a little bit here, for sure. But I mean, you know, I was kind of curious. I always like to try to not so much get inside the mind of a winemaker, but how you approach things. Do you take the opportunity to go out and taste at other wineries here, or do you maybe go to Sonoma or up to Mendocino or something like that, just to get the flavor of the area?
Oh, yeah. Like, I don't normally drink Napa wines. I drink Napa wines, but I like to drink what is done, I don't know, in Washington, because I think it's an upcoming wine region. I like to drink Pinot Noir, Sonoma. I drink a lot of Spanish wine at home. We drink a lot of Italian and Spanish wine, my husband and I. So I'm constantly tasting other things. And I sometimes like, oh, this should be so fun to make. Like, I want to know more about the winemaking, and I dig out. And you know, this is a small it's a big community, but it's a small community. Winemakers, we connect, we taste wines. We like, if we find a wine that is fun, we just share with other friends and winemakers. And we all the time, I personally, when I have a question about winemaking, I go to all different winemakers from different wine regions so they, I can have like different views. And so I'm constantly kind of like exploring what's going on out there. Yeah.
Well, it's a constant education in this business, isn't it?
It is. And I don't think that is, it's very wise for a winemaker to just get stuck in like, I'm making my wine, develop a house palette, and not to you know, explore what's out there. I think it's wise to understand that the markets change, the trends change, and I think as winemaker, we need to grow also as well and learn.
Do you ever take any time and spend time in the tasting room at all?
Here?
Yeah.
I've been working every Saturday morning. I try to understand what those guys do and what they have to go through. And, you know, and it's fun. It's fun. I like to see happy faces when they're drinking wine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, the guests and how they love them? The wines, and they love to see the winemaker. So
you tell them you're the winemaker. They know.
Yes. Good. Yeah, yeah. Of okay. course.
That's got to be pretty exciting, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, it'd be kind of fun to be incognito, too, though, you know, not necessarily tell them you're the winemaker.
Sometimes I pretend like, I don't know, like, do you like the wines? And they just talk about the wines, and I don't say that I'm the winemaker. And it's
you get the truth.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Yeah.
So if you were talking to somebody who was newer to wine, and of course there are a lot of people who come here to Napa who know very little about it, and that's one thing people say all the time, well, I know nothing about wine. I always like to tell people is what you enjoy. But what would you tell somebody to improve their education? How would you say to somebody, as we call them, a newbie, where would you go? What do you do?
I think, first of all, you have to be very open-minded. You just cannot say, I think people are very limited when they say, oh, I don't like white wines. It's okay if you don't like white wines, but just try them. Just give them a chance. Give them a second chance, a third chance, and you will find a wine that you will say, wow, now I understand why Chardonnay is that great, or something like that. So for me, I think it's like not to be scared, and not to be scared also of saying what you think about the wine that you are tasting. It doesn't matter how you describe what you're tasting. It's as valid as, you know, any sommelier that describes this wine. And just not to be afraid, just taste and try as much as you can and ask all the questions that you need to ask to understand it. The wine world is not as scary as people think. And it's about what you like and what you enjoy at the end of the day.
That was an excellent answer.
Thank you. Well, is that true?
It is true, because again, wine is an agricultural product. Mm-hmm. It's all progression, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm.
For our listeners who'd like to learn a little bit more about Ehlers, well, I guess first thing is the tasting room here. Is this by appointment, or can anybody just walk on up and have a tasting?
It's by appointment, but we accept walk-ins if we have the time to host them and to treat them properly and to spend the right time with them. We don't just like to pour some wine and, you know, we spend a lot of time with each of our guests. But they're welcome. But mostly by appointment, it's better to call because we are busy. But yeah.
Well, treating them properly, I mean, that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
And for our listeners who'd like to learn about you online, how would they do that?
Well, they can go to ehlersestate.com.
Great. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you for coming to Ehlers and, yeah, spend some time with me.
Cheers.
Learn more by visiting ehlersestate.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2018.